The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
I'm going out on the road to find out what it's like to be poor and needy, and then I'm going to make a picture
about it. If you'll permit me to say so, sir, the subject is not an interesting one. The poor know all about poverty. And only the morbid rich would find the topic glamorous.
But I'm doing it for the poor, don't you understand?
I doubt if they would appreciate it, sir. They rather resent the invasion of their privacy. I believe quite properly, sir. Also, such excursions can be extremely dangerous, sir. I worked for a gentleman once who likewise, with two friends, accoutred themselves as you have, sir, and then went out for a lark. They have not been heard from since.
That was some time ago.
1912, sir.
Hey everyone, it's another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Today we're going to be discussing 1941's Sullivan's Travels, directed by Preston Sturges, a director that you have never heard of in this podcast.
Certainly never heralded any of his movies before.
This is continuing in our year of AFI movies. But before we do that, let's do this. It's a little segment we like to call Heralds and Denouncements.
Alright,
Patrick.
I don't have anything to herald or denounce. I haven't seen anything that I felt super strongly about. So, I can herald working on a movie where we blew up a car. That was kind of fun.
Cool.
Harold the stunt team.
Ryan from the OC.
Yep. I haven't met him yet, but he hasn't been in the movie yet. But he's on hold, so he'll be in the movie eventually.
Nice. Yeah. Unfortunately, I also don't have like a good Harold announcement in terms of movie. So I'll just herald Judith winning best short film at the Mumbai LGBTQ Short Film Festival.
Nice.
So that's awesome.
Very good.
And a bunch of other prizes. So, well done, my girlfriend.
Nice.
Good job, Judith.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're 3-for-3 then. Because I'm not going to herald or denounce anything either. So, let's just get into Sullivan's Travels then, which was Ilya's pick. So,
yeah.
Tell us what happens in this movie.
Sure. Joel McRae, I think, is that pronouncing his name right? McRae?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Seems right.
He plays a successful Hollywood movie director who, after a string of comedies and or lighthearted mainstream pictures, wants to make a serious film that's depicting, you know, the real life of poor people. And he convinces his producers that in order to do that, he needs to embark on a journey aiming to get to no trouble. But that journey keeps getting set back. He keeps getting sent back to Hollywood. And along the way, he meets a struggling actress, Veronica Lake, who then joins him on that journey. And as he gets to know the real reality of poverty in America, the movie takes a lot of twists and turns, changing like from one genre to the next.
Mm-hmm. Ruben, what did you think of this movie? Well, Ruben,
what did you think of this movie?
I like this movie, but I also think it's very politically confused and doesn't have any consistent points to make, but I think Preston Sturges is a good director. There are a lot of funny parts, and when I first saw this movie, and it's still true to this day, Veronica Lake dressed up as a hobo awoke something inside of me, as they say. I still feel very strongly about those scenes. In a somewhat uncomfortable way.
Oh yeah.
Good times.
Not because of homophobia, but because of objectification of women. I don't feel at all uncomfortable about being attracted to men.
Right on. Right on. Yeah, I know what you mean there. although having seen it now, this is the first time I've seen this movie, and I didn't like it slightly, because I think I appreciate the overall message that there is like almost a different set of rules for rich and poor people, and I'm like, all right, good on you, Preston Sturges, for commenting on that. But also the like drama of the movie is like, oh no, will this rich producer get back to being rich and famous? And you know, like I don't know if I'm like down with that. Like I kind of wish that the poor people weren't just set dressing for him throughout the majority of this movie. And I don't know, the whole comedy of just being like, oh well, you think I'm a poor guy, but I'm actually a rich guy, like, doesn't land for me in a weird way where I'm like, eh, I don't know if that actually like says anything. Like, that's
what
just...
about the comedy of her being really mad when what, he reveals that he's, that's that the he's... case.
I mean, I actually like am on her side there. Like, I think right to be mad, because he's
think
like,
you're supposed to be.
Yeah, and I yeah. don't understand why she stays with him after that, because I would be like, no, I don't want to be around you. You're a weird rich dude who
well, he's a
thinks
handsome,
he's gonna learn something
rich
by
dude.
Being around poor people.
I like the fact that Preston Sturges, in Preston Sturges films, people sometimes like each other because they want to have sex with each other, and that's another thing that kind of enters into it.
Yeah.
So that's cool. But sorry, Patrick, didn't want
no,
to
no,
interrupt
it's,
you.
No, it's fine. I don't like how everything seems to sort of come down on the side of, oh well, the you know like rich and famous movie director is the good guy here, you know. And not the asshole bad guy for doing, you know, and everything's going to go well for him because he's a law-abiding citizen. But that hobo who was desperate and needed money that knocked him out got run over by a train. So who cares about him?
I sure don't like that scene. I don't know if I agree with you on the other thing, but I sure hate that moment a lot.
Yeah. Terrible. Preston Sturges name drops a few directors in this movie. One of them is Lubitsch.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he should have really taken a page off of Lubitsch in terms of... Lubitsch made a movie that also managed to be a lot of different things at the same time and yet was pretty unmistakable in what its intentions were. That's To Be or Not to Be. It's an awesome movie that manages to be a comedy and a drama and a lot of different things all at once. And this tries to be a lot of those things, and it's not as successful. I'd still say I like it more than I don't, because it's still Preston Sturges, and a lot of stuff here seems really kind of ahead of its time, I feel like. I mean, basically talking about rich people's obsession with poverty and like their guilt complex in terms of like wanting to present it authentically, but without ever really understanding what it means. And I feel like there's a meta joke here somewhere about Sullivan never really understanding what it means, even though he goes through like a really rough experience. I think there would have been actually a really poignant and I'd say probably very strong movie in here somewhere. If, for example, if you take the last part and see like that, how movies become like a part of the basically the prison industrial complex or whatever, like there's the guy like mistreats his prisoners awfully, and then like he lets them watch pictures, and that's like, if you think about that as like Hollywood basically becoming a part of that, you know, like that's a really dark way to see it.
Walt
but
Disney, no
instead
less.
Yeah, but instead the movie basically doubles back and says, well, you know what, laughter is so it's really important.
Yeah.
And
the ending is very bad,
and that's just That's just a really strange way for the movie to go, and especially for a guy of Sturges' intelligence who's clearly aware of all these, who's aware of some of these things, let's say. To be aware of them and yet not realize what his point maybe really should have been is a frustrating experience. So
yeah. I think there's a lot of stuff in the last section. We're ready to just get into free discussion that, like, could easily be critique, but doesn't totally seem like it is.
Yeah, it
critique, but that, like, I'm sort of okay with taking as critique anyway. Like the quote that I mentioned pre-podcast, when he's sitting there with the guy who's, like, nice in the prison camp, and he's like, rich, famous film directors don't go to a place like this over a little disagreement, but he smashed that guy's head in with a rock.
And like, with his head all bandaged, what he's, like, his whole head bandaged.
It's like, if what he's saying is true, that's kind of gross. And of course it is true.
Rich
people don't.
And I think that is definitely critique. But the thing I'll say that I think is not, like, doesn't jive with that is that he makes this a movie about, like, getting to the happy ending. Like, he's basically making the movie that the producers want Sullivan to make at the beginning of the movie, you know, where it's a comedy with a little sex in it, you know, where it's like, oh, it's a feel-good picture. And I'm like, so you've just made a feel-good picture about, you know, how, you know, rich people just exploit the poor for their own gain so that they can sell their product to other rich people, because that's basically what it is. It's like, he wants to make this book because he thinks other rich people, you know, need to see, like, a serious film, this this book that he wants to make a film of, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which very, like, obvious ties the Coen brothers have to this movie. Like, seems like it's, like, totally their wheelhouse in terms of dialogue too. Like, a lot of their movies deal in that kind of, like, fast paced
except for all the slapstick, I suppose.
Some of their movies have slapstick. I mean, you definitely go back and look at Raising Arizona.
Coen brothers have tons of slapstick.
Yeah, Raising Arizona. And about? I mean, like, even Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? It's just like,
even Fargo.
I guess.
A lot of people getting hit in the face and falling down.
Yeah, fair point. Fair point. Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I feel weird about this basically being that kind of movie where it's, you know, the producers want him to make a movie that's feel good, has a little sex in it, and, you know, maybe has something to say along the way, but not too serious, because everything's got to end up happy for the protagonists at the end. And that's the way I feel about this movie, where I'm like, okay, he makes this commentary that that kind of stuff is, I don't know, like, this, like, balm to the poor, and I'm like, that's kind of a gross way to look at it. But then you're like, you realize he's also making that type of movie. So is that what you're saying? You're saying, like, oh, well, I help poor people because my movies are funny. And I'm like,
I mean, like, so this is, like, my whole issue with the movie is that I think you can take that reading out of it, but, like, if you're looking at those producer characters who are really horrible people and you say this movie was made to their standards, then isn't the movie in itself a critique of itself? But, like, this is, so my issue with the movie is that I feel like he doesn't have, like, a clear point. Like, I'm not willing to say, oh, he meant the thing that you're saying right now. What I do think is that this movie tries to cover its ass, like, constantly. Yeah. Like, it's always just, like, slightly shifting its viewpoint in order to, like, hit the highest note in that one moment. And so it's like, I don't know if he does the thing that you're saying, but I know that he is willing to both play what you're saying and play a critique of it at the exact same time and not really come down strongly on the side of either.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of what makes me think that it's crass, though. It's it kind of wants to have its cake and eat it, too, where it's like, all right, I still want this picture to be a success, but I also want to, you know, do the thing that basically Sullivan wants to do, where he wants to hold a mirror up to the world. It's like, okay, if you're going to do that, do that. If you're going to make a crass funny picture do that, but it seems very, I don't know exactly the word for it, but it, I don't know, it seems very inauthentic to try and go both ways on it.
Yeah, I think, like, to give maybe a more, like, I don't know, give him a bit more credit for what the movie's trying to make, is I feel like he, there's arguments, like, both ways, like, that Hollywood maybe really shouldn't be the platform to take itself so seriously that they know so much about, you know, the life that they're depicting, and it's okay to make fun of the people who attempt that, and it also sort of acknowledge the fact that movies do play a serious role for people, because, you know, as a person who clearly made a couldn't like dedicated a huge part of his life to this, he probably took movies pretty seriously. Yeah. Like it's fair to say. And so, like, the fact that this movie kind of tries to do a lot of different things, I'd say it's his attempt to, like, you know, also show, like, a pretty broad spectrum of what film can do. And I don't think, I agree with Ruben that altogether, he doesn't really make a clear point enough. He never really goes far enough in order to make any of its critique really salient. But he does try a lot of different things. And when you try a lot of different things, you're bound to come up short in at least a few of them, you know? Like, I'd say it's more interesting as a failed picture like this than it would be if he was just, you know, just trying, quote unquote, to critique like Hollywood or whatever. Like, I think it's interesting what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
But I think mostly you guys are probably right that it's kind of a failure.
I do think it's, like, an extremely fine line to walk, and so I don't begrudge Sturgis for maybe stepping out here and there. And, I mean, like, it's not to say, like, you can't make a movie that does both, but it's extremely hard, and I don't think that he does it here.
There are some things that I unequivocally dislike about this film, though. So, there's a part at the beginning where the butler is talking about poverty, and I think we chose to begin the podcast with the good part of it, and then right after that, he says something really horrible, where he's like, poverty is like a disease infecting the world, spreading lawlessness and disorder, and I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, even in that character, like, he can't seem to, like, keep his story straight as far as the writing goes, because I'm like, okay, so does this guy understand the critique that, you know, Sturgis is trying to make, or does he not? Because it's, I don't know, maybe it's a gag on the audience where you're like, oh, okay, this guy gets it. And then, like, he just turns around and says something awful like that. And you're like, oh, no, he doesn't get it at all.
No, I think it's just
it's confusion, probably. Yeah, yep. Yeah.
Seeping through, and I don't think that there's any complexity to it. And then the other part that I definitely unequivocally dislike is we were talking about is the straight up, like, Hays Code style moral punishment for the guy who hits Sullivan over the head and steals from him in a
very
ridiculously laid out scene as well. It's not just a bad scene. Narratively and thematically, it's really bad formally as well.
Yeah.
Which almost there's makes a me few think other that scenes... he didn't want to include it, but because it's so poorly
I'd say the
shot.
Whole. I'd say the whole scene involving the black waiter in the train. I'd also add to that with him getting like whatever. Like it's, I don't know. Remember where I read it? Maybe it was James Harvey or someone who said that Sturgis was pretty racist. There's that whole scene with the black preacher at the end of this movie where I'm not sure how to take it exactly, which kind of puts that into a different focus, but that scene for sure is really bad and has not aged well at all. But, you know, I guess it maybe without saying it's explicitly racist, it's like vaudevillian and like sort of minstrelsy.
Yeah, but yeah, it definitely has that vibe to it where it's just like, oh, this.
It's bad. Yeah. It's definitely really bad to watch it right now. It's awful.
Yeah, I think one of the things that is good about that scene is unintentional. Like at the time would have been a signal that black people are bad is the fact that they're nice to prisoners. Like that would have been seen as a bad quality in 1941, whereas the fact that black people are nice to prisoners to me is like, yeah, black people are better than white people.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
They're like, let them sit at the front. They're no different than us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did. Yeah. I also was like, at the same time, I was like, this guy feels like a caricature, but he's like, actually the only truly compassionate character in the movie.
It's,
yeah. It's well, really him and Veronica Lake, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, who is awesome in this movie, by the way. I want to stress the fact that I really like Veronica Lake in this movie a lot.
I think a lot. Yeah, I mean, I think I would not like this movie if I didn't think Lake and McRae were such strong performers with such great chemistry, because they're great. I do really think that it's very confused as to what it's saying, but I think that they're very, I mean, if it didn't come out in 1941, you know, they would be at the top of my short list for best performances of that year. But he also released Lady Eve.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then Fonda and Barbara Stanwyck just a touch better.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. There was another bit that kind of bothered me about the movie, though, is the way, like, their interaction. Like, not to say their performances were bad, but it was more just the way that the interaction was framed. In that, I don't know. I think what I like about screwball comedies like The Lady Eve or like Bringing Up Baby is that they managed to turn the sort of like man-woman power dynamic on its head a lot, and that actually like helps those pictures quite a bit. And this one doesn't really do that at all. Like the power dynamic is still, you know, like this man who's basically going to take care of this woman, and the jokes don't really ever like subvert that in any way. And I got kind
of Screwball tends to be a more feminist genre. I wouldn't go far as to call it actually feminist, but a more feminist genre, and this movie certainly is not that.
Yeah, and that kind of bothered me about it too, because I was like, this Sullivan guy, like, I don't want to root for him. Like, he's kind of a wet blanket. He's just always talking about like how people should like take things seriously and think about the problems of the world, and I'm like, why would you stay with this guy? And like, why can we not have this guy, you know, like,
it's a real sexy deep voice.
I think she really wants to
jawline
to get close to him.
Yeah. It just feels a little too much like it's leaning into the whole like women want to be dominated by a strong man who can take care of them or whatever, and I'm like,
I don't know if I see that.
It seems to me like from what I can tell, like she kind of knows exactly what she wants, and he doesn't know what he wants for a long time, and that's like a pretty classic dynamic or whatever.
I'm not saying it's like they're in like her performance, but I'm saying that like the movie itself seems to think that, like, it seems to be like, oh yeah, well, she'll end up with him because like that's what she really wants. Like the movie seems to think like it kind of knows what's best for her or whatever, and that rubbed
me. I just can't understand how Joel McRae is not just looking at her face the whole time in this movie. He's just constantly is looking away.
Oh,
he's just like extremely
to run into this extreme,
weird and frustrating.
This extremely beautiful actress with like perfectly done hair in this diner. Like, oh hey, what's up?
I
think her voice is her best quality.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, but just like how perfectly like done her makeup and hair is when he goes that first scene when he meets her in the diner.
It's extremely distracting.
Are you kidding me? She looks like she just walked off of a movie set.
By the way, I apparently read that Veronica Lake died in a pretty horrible way. Like, she then suffered from like manic de- manic depression, obviously at the time could not be medicated, might have self-medicated with alcohol, lost all her friends, everyone she knew, and died alone and not any money. That's fucking horrible to think about.
She had a pretty upsetting life. Yeah, she had like a brief shining moment, and then a combination of factors, including that and probably an early example of the, you know, like hard to work with actress,
yeah,
and got sort right. of muscled
yeah.
out of Hollywood, and yeah, ended
Very
up
sad.
Broke and alone. One of the best actresses of all time.
Yep. She is great.
Well, I was going to talk about the things that I unequivocally like about the movie.
Sorry for bringing it down there.
Strongly shift the tone. One of them is something that, I mean, I guess I have seen the movie before, so maybe I didn't really call it, but I didn't remember the movie super well. But the scene at the beginning when the two producers are trying to convince him not to do this, and they're like, you don't know anything about trouble. You know, I was taking care of my sister and, you know, my mother or whatever. That's trouble, blah, 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 and they're giving stories. And I wrote down a note that says, all these people were always rich. I don't believe that they worked their way up for a second. And then he leaves the room, and they're like, what were all those lies you said about those things? And I was like, yes, I knew it. There's no
yeah.
way that
yeah.
Prestige Sturgis buys
that
the
was
idea
the best way for that scene to end. Yeah,
that
absolutely.
These guys are hard workers.
Yeah. He was like, I did run a bowling alley. Yeah, that you borrowed from your uncle.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty funny.
And I was like, that was a great moment, because, yeah, for any complaints that I might have about Sturgis takes on gender or race, he seems to really understand rich people being big phonies.
Yep. Yep. And that too, I think, is like, it's one of the weirder things that I found about, like, capitalist culture in general, where they're like, they will acknowledge that rich people are the worst and they're big phonies, but they always sort of like chalk it up to this, I don't know, this like amorphous idea of like greed is bad or whatever. And it's like, can't you just acknowledge that capitalism is the problem? Like, how do you just keep dancing around that? Because I feel like it's a message that I've seen, you know,
take dead aim at the rich
yeah.
kids.
my entire life I've been taught like greed is bad and being rich and wanting money is bad. And like it even says in the Bible, like, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter heaven. And then like everybody's like, oh, but you know, we can still work with capitalism. It's like, what? You're right there. You're like just that one step further. You're like, why not a system that doesn't emphasize, you know,
there's a Twitter account called But No Potato, based off of the phrase close but no potato, and it's just tweets from people where it's like they almost say the right thing but they don't. It's like oh, if healthcare is the right, why not food, why not shelter?
Yeah. It's like, you're right,
I mean,
there.
You're
like,
right.
And
all those, and all those three points
we've assigned to it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just something that, like, especially in older movies where I see it and I'm like, you've got the idea. But they just, like, I don't know, they want to distance themselves from communism because it's, you know, the era of
McCarthyism.
Yeah,
even includes
or whatever.
A little line.
Like,
the
communism's
beginning.
Bad. Like, that's exactly what communism teaches.
Yeah. Going back to some of the scenes in this movie that I liked a lot is actually the scene where he gets, where he goes to court and he gets sentenced. And before he even has, like, a chance to really say anything, because he's just some poor guy without a thing, they just sentence him right away, and then the way he's treated when he gets to the prison is really good commentary on what happens to undocumented and or people without like money or documentation or whatever in this country, in that country. And that's like, wow, like Present Surges is really getting to the point here. And then like,
you can
that's
say
another,
in your country.
Yeah, in your country, yeah. Guys. Yes, let's do it that. Let's
we're responsible.
Yeah. That's fine. It's another actual instance of like good observation in this movie without anything then to capitalize on that observation. I feel like it's just it's there, but then it's not like he's making a point about how people like this get treated. It's just like, oh, this just happens to this guy, and that's a well-observed way in which it would happen to him.
Yeah.
And
one
then
thing that
like,
I like about that scene is that the two lawyers, the prosecutor and the district attorney, look exactly the same. Like,
yeah.
They're styled the same. They just look like the same dude. And I'm like, oh, that has to be intentional. That it's like,
yeah,
they're just two sides of the same coin. They're just... They're doing a job. And neither of them care about this person whatsoever.
And I like how after he gets sentenced to 6 years hard labor, he's like, "You got off easy." It's like, oh wow.
Yeah. Rough.
Another part that I really like in this movie is when he says that he can get a car for them so that he can drive her back to wherever she's going, and she's like, "What kind of car?" And he's like, "A car." And she goes, "All right, well, anything but a Stanley Steamer. My uncle blew up in one." But that was really funny.
Yeah, this movie does do quips well. It does throw some quips out there at you.
Well, he's like one of the greatest writers in Hollywood history. Like, yeah. It does have some good lines.
I do also like the part at the end where they're showing the movie and everybody's laughing, and he like laughs for a second and then turns to the guy next to him and goes, "Am I laughing?"
I really like the description of his film when they're like riding along, and he's like describing John Sullivan's films, and he's like, "Did you see that one?" She's like, "No." He's like, "What about that one?" And she's like, "Oh yeah, I love that one. When he's in the barn and he thinks he's kissing the woman, he's blindfolded, he kissed the pig, and then he sneezes, and then the horse sneezed too."
It's very good.
This guy does not sound like he's an actually particularly good director.
No.
No.
But his movies
he's kind of a hack. Yeah.
It's okay to be a hack and only care about money as long as your pictures make poor people laugh.
I like that Hollywood is like kind of a purgatory in this film. Like, he just keeps ending up back there.
Can't escape it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of really nice lighting on the train. Mm-hmm. I think it's really weird, the structure of this movie, that like the first hour in a way is actually set up and the last 20 minutes is the plot. Like, until he actually, you know, is thought of as dead and disappears, in a way there's no real conflict, because like he says, he just keeps ending up back in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like, nothing happens. It's
it's a weird
all
structure.
Vignettes in a way.
Yeah, it's weird they have that like long montage of them actually like living in that poorhouse for like one night basically, and get, you know, like them sleeping in the pile of people, and there
where it's all music without any dialogue.
There's actually a good little like, I don't know, like kind of poignant moment in there where there's somebody sleeping next to him and he like sees the guy's shoes. And then he wakes up and the guy's gone and just his shoes are left. And I was like, ooh, that feels very grim.
He stole his shoes.
Oh, he stole his shoes? I thought the guy had died.
It cuts,
just left
it cut,
shoes.
No, it cuts to Joel McRae's shoes and he has no shoes on his feet. And he left his shitty shoes.
Oh, okay. Took his nice shoes. I misread that scene.
Yeah.
And I was like, good on you. Steal that rich dude's shoes.
That's much better, actually. I like that scene more. Now that's funny. Rich people now being stolen from? Now that's funny.
The other thing that I unequivocally don't like about the movie is the wife.
Got another great
bad inclusion.
Another great shrew character.
Yeah. Oof. When she finds out that he's alive and she hits her new husband on the head, she's like, "You ruined us. We could have had all this money."
She breaks the lamp over his head.
It's like, I hate this character.
Yeah.
That's all I get.
Some good visual gags in this movie, though.
Falling into a pool. Everyone can push into that pool. Yeah. That's all I have. Does anyone else have anything they want to say about this movie?
Nope. I've stated my case.
I'm good.
Well stated. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you're enjoying the podcast. If so, please send us... please subscribe using your podcast listening application and give us a 5-star rating review on iTunes. We really do appreciate it. You can find all of our content on loosecannons.net as well as become a patron on our Patreon, patreon.com/loosecannons. If you hear clicking on the podcast, I was looking at what's coming up next, and it looks like it's all about Eve. Mm-hmm. It's going to be our next...
Get into another AFI movie.
Film.
All right.
And, of course, look forward to the mid-year podcast, which we'll be doing again this year in June. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. I'm not going to be able to do that.